Capitol. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group Studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necro Novapod with your host, Mike Stoffel, and Mike Moncana, Episode 141, John Blackburn's Bury Him Darkly, the story of a little tiny symbiotic organism that grows up to be a great big monster. And now, Necro Novapod.
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
All right.
Here we are again.
Once again.
The spring edition of Necronomipod.
The on-again, off-again spring edition of Necronomipod. So, our second John Blackburn book, Bury Him Darkly.
Yes.
So, this is about 10 years after the first one.
Bury him darkly with his song. Bury me darkly.
No, his song. Go on. Keep going.
Oh, now I know what song I'm going to put at the end of this.
That occurred to me. what did you think?
So, who was the writer we just read recently that just threw everything in?
Like Michael Talbot?
Okay, Michael Talbot.
Yeah.
This book reminded me of a poor man's Michael Talbot because it starts off as a, you know, kind of what you're thinking is going to be like maybe a vampire and then a kind of a, like one of those mystery organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns into an alien,
yep.
Nazi alien, blob, and the race to cure with the crusade. There's the crusades, and then there's there's a little bit of the Da Vinci Code it just kept turning every which way. Michael Talbot, here we are.
There, you know, I didn't make that connection, but you're absolutely right. I wonder if Michael Talbot actually had John Blackburn under his belt somewhere, because everything is they're pulling together. John Blackburn pulls together so many disparate ideas into this one story. And they hang together, more or less. Because there's nothing else going on. All he's got is plot. Because he sure doesn't have any characters. But he has a lot of names.
There's a lot of plot. There's
very little characterization.
But there's people.
But there's lots of people. So I like this book better than I like Scent of New Mown Hay.
Yeah, it's better. It's not great.
No, well, it's... I'm getting to get the sense of what Blackburn does best.
Yes,
What he does best is he manufactures these plots, and they move very quickly, and they constantly change underneath you. When you think you know where something is going, it switches, and that's actually kind of thrilling.
Talbot. He did the same thing.
Same thing with Michael Talbot. Michael Talbot actually did it with some decent characterization, but we're not talking about Michael Talbot, or maybe a little bit.
Compare and contrast. It's a legitimate way of talking about a book.
Totally legit.
I'm going to compare this book to Game of Thrones, the TV series.
And find it wanting.
I agree. That's the one part that's the thing I liked about the book, but the thing I didn't like about the book, just right off the bat, is that it felt like it took forever to read such a small book.
Yeah,
it's... And like, what is that?
It's weird. This is the second book like that.
Yes.
That we've read by him. Edition only has 150 pages, and it took me days and days.
I mean, the plot moves swiftly, but it's plotting at the same time.
I know.
It's
a total paradox.
It is paradoxical. It's like you're entering this weird... quantum state, that you're moving and not moving at the same time.
I know, it's like the vertigo, pan back and zoom in, Those shots from Vertigo where you're like looking down the stairs.
Yes, like Hitchcock. Well, I think the problem is it's not, it's nothing is fleshed out.
Yeah.
It's a skeleton wearing a baggy suit. And his
kind of, yeah. Yeah. Well, that actually made sense to me. What is in this drink?
I'm so drunk, I'm making sense to you.
Oh my God. No, it's funny. So let's.
You are well read.
Yeah. Well,
and you're also an editor.
Sort of.
And so, come on. So you have to have an idea of what makes it. What is it in a book that makes a book feel like you're stepping on the gas and not moving at the same time? What is that?
You know, in the case of this book, I think it is that. It's literally like stepping on the gas is what this book does. It moves very, very fast.
I think I'm going to have answer to my own question, but okay. I'm curious what you're going
to
say.
It moves very, very fast. And it gives you no time to absorb anything. It just throws all this stuff at you. And that, like I said, it's very thrilling. It can be quite thrilling, to read a book like that. But it's not gonna get any deeper than like the most surface layer of your attention.
Okay, so here's what I would say, and mm-hmm. I would say yes to that, and yes, and that I think my experience of it is, for one thing, you don't really have any buy-in with anybody. Yeah. So you don't really care.
Yeah, you don't care about
you
any
don't
of these
really
characters.
Care, and even in some of the worst books, you can still care about a character, right? Or care about what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, it's
even the most superficial. And believe me, I read a lot of superficial things that from this podcast, actually.
No, absolutely,
that you still can care.
Yeah, well, it's so funny. So
One other thing added to that is that also, along with that, is that it doesn't, how do I want to say this? You don't care, and it doesn't feel honest.
The
things he's laying out and throwing out, they don't feel truthful for some reason.
They don't feel like earned plot turns.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I understand that. They feel like, you know, how people feel cheated when a really complicated story ends too patly, like the Deus Ex Machina. You know, the hand of God comes down and sets everything right, and you're like, well, that's a little too easy.
Characters can override all of that.
Yeah.
Right.
Many of the plot points in here feel like a Deus Ex Machina or a Deus Ex Diabolus.
The hard things are earned easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what I was going to say about you don't care about the characters. Well, and I think, and this might just be a function of, John Blackburn's when he's writing the kind of person world he grew up in, but I found myself caring for characters that I don't think he wanted us to care for.
Who did you care for?
For instance,
Nancy.
Nancy, the woman who's the heir to the fortune or whatever it is that is hidden in the vault in this book. And you know, I think you know, she's like, she's mentally challenged, and she's had just a crap life, and I'm thinking, oh well, she's gonna, you know, good for her, but by the time it all works out, I think I was supposed to immediately dislike her because she was, you know, just a poor drudge.
You know who I thought of in my mind? My picture of Nancy was that woman from England, from Britain's Got Talent, Susan. The one who came out as a drudge, but she had this beautiful voice.
But she's
a little mentally challenged, and she might have Asperger's or something. Susan something.
Yeah, she has a bunch of records now.
Yeah, she did really, really well, but that's who I pictured.
I can't remember her name, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Well, maybe we should.
Let's try to
do the plot very
really quickly. So what we have here in this book is these people are circling around this old
estate.
Manor house
yeah.
That was owned by this this 18th century polymath. He was named Martin Railstone, Sir Martin Railstone, who was an
artist. Had the dropsy.
He had the dropsy. He was an artist and a poet and a debauched creature.
In his later life.
In his later years. But, you know, he left this body of work that have left a certain number of admirers, people who think he was a genius, even though an evil or possibly an evil genius.
And he leaves his estate to the church.
Yeah. So
with a prophecy.
Yeah. When he dies, he first of all, he produces all this work in the last years before he dies and releases none of it and insists that he gets buried with it. So in this vault with his body is this work, poetry, paintings, God knows what.
Right.
Leaves the church, leaves everything to the church. And with the proviso that the vault can be opened and its contents exposed only if a descendant of him who has red hair and his condition, dropsy, can be produced. And
if that person, it's a woman. He says it's going to be a woman. It has to be a woman. She will come.
Yeah.
And then only she can go into the vault and get his stuff.
And this woman, this person, nobody believes that this person can exist because they don't think he, you know, there's just no way to find this person. The church has some special knowledge of what may or may not be in this vault and so refuses to let anybody get in.
And in the meantime, there's a society, this organization that is dedicated to him. And to finding out what's in the vault and trying to get the church to open the vault and to get inside the vault.
They do some desperate measures early on in the book. One particular aficionado tries to break in and is driven insane and killed by something in there.
They're trying to push the hand of the bishop of the Church of England to go ahead and open this vault because side plot. The town has decided to build a dam, and then where this estate is going to be underwater. Yep. So the time is a ticking.
Yep, time's a ticking. So lots of business goes on, and we won't go into it. But they do actually find a descendant, this woman that we were speaking about, Nancy.
And there's this crew of people. There's like an archaeologist.
Yeah,
there's a Nazi. There's a possible Nazi.
Yeah, next Nazi. There's these people, and they find this woman. The woman, in the end, they go in. I'm skipping a whole bunch of stuff here.
But there's two things you do have to say.
Which is?
There's these orbs. These vessels that or may not be the chalice, the Holy Grail.
Yeah, there's some business.
But it's split into two. Uh-huh. And this Sir Radcliffe, what is his name? The main guy, the dead guy.
Sir Railstone.
Railstone might have drank from this.
What they think is the Holy Grail.
Turned him into a genius. So they think that's buried in the tomb.
Yeah. So this is one of some of the business in the middle there where you're talking about, is this guy a vampire? What is this guy?
Right.
And then suddenly we're talking about the Holy freaking Grail.
Right.
So we get all the stuff about the Holy Grail and how, you know, this legend about how Percival and all this kind of stuff. And then they chuck all that. Because they find out they enter the tomb finally with this woman, and
she kisses the body because she's obsessed about it too now.
Yeah, and the plot changes again. Suddenly the whole Grail stuff is chucked, and what we have is we're supposed to assume is an alien artifact that's been on the Earth for 15 million years, and
it's been opened.
And that what it is a sort of a biological
organism
invader.
Yeah,
it's a biological invader, and I will talk about this more later because it's really interesting where this idea pops up again in pop culture lately.
And then the thing with the invader is that when it invaded Ralston, it because of his condition,
he was
able to
accommodate it,
and then it sort of created that sort of like that Flowers for Algernon. It expanded his brain.
Made him really smart.
Really smart and beyond smart. He became beyond a genius.
Which explains the flowering of his work late in life.
But if other people come in contact with it who don't have its, who don't have the genetic ability to accommodate it, they are just, they're like the Borg. They just take,
they're more or less, they integrate,
they kill it and integrate all of it into it.
Yeah. So they die.
They die, but they don't die because they're like, I'm not mixing it up. It's almost like they're integrated into the organism.
Yes.
Because the organism is like...
But their physical body actually dies.
It's broken down into something. It is absorbed.
Yeah. So...
the clothes aren't and the teeth aren't.
But. Yeah. So by the so at the end, Nancy, the true heir, is transformed into sort of a amoeba-like Lovecraftian shambling gray monster.
Right.
That's super smart.
Yeah. But not just her though, right? Because the other organism is also moving. I mean, it's huge now.
Yeah,
right?
Because it starts assimilating other people, it gets bigger and bigger, and they find out, because there's these two of these orbs that look vaguely grail-like. The other one is buried in some saint's tomb, Saint Wolfram or something like that. And there's some hand-wavy explanation about if two of these organisms, assimilate separately and they meet, they cancel each other out and they both die.
Right.
And so that's how the book works out.
And the Nazi who did all these experiments early on with this orb and figured this out, he was like a Nazi doctor in a concentration camp, kind of. He was sort of aware of what was happening and didn't do anything about it. He feels great guilt, and he's the one who kind of takes in the other orb's organism and jumps in.
And becomes that canceling factor.
And he dies, and they say everybody's saved.
And everybody's saved. So it's very similar in some ways to The Scent of New Moon Hay. You have all these weird turns, and then the main peril turns out to be something more or less like a contagion that is endangering the world.
And vaguely fungus-like.
And vaguely spore fungus-like. And that and there's, like I said, this hand-wavy explanation to sort of fix it. In the first book, in the Scent of New Moon Hay, it was radiation in the vaguest
gamma rays. It was gamma rays.
And in this one, it's some sort of alternate biological vector.
Right.
And
it's basically decimating the countryside.
Yes. So the things that made it difficult for me to enjoy The Scent of New Mown Hay, some of that stuff was tamped down. I think his control over the narrative was a little more assured in this book. I mean, it's 10 years later, and he's at this point, he had probably published 30 novels. He just cranked them out. The things that drove me crazy of the first book, not crazy, but just didn't work for me, didn't go away in this book. They just were less annoying, or maybe I was more used to them.
Or drunk.
Yeah. I don't know. So I was going to tell you what this book made me flash on, this a big pop culture thing going on right now. You do not watch The Expanse or have read any of The Expanse books.
No.
Mm-hmm. In The Expanse, there's this entity called the protomolecule. What the protomolecule is a sort of a biological vector sent from another solar system.
Inside of an orb?
It's kind not in an orb. It's some probe. They discovered on a moon of Saturn. And what it does is when it reaches biological material, it starts to take it over and assimilate it and become larger. Sort of like the thing. Although the thing, it's a little different than the thing, because what the protomolecule does is in The Expanse is it works almost like DNA. It learns and it builds things like machines. Sort of biological machines, and it has a purpose, which I won't get into. But it's very similar to what was happening. As much as John Blackburn explains what's happening in this book, Bury Him Darkly.
Remember that book that we read where there was like a spaceship that was like organic, and it was kind of doing the same thing. It was surrounding a planet.
Oh, it was those Peter Watts books, Blindsight.
But it's kind of like that too.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of that.
All right.
Yeah. So,
but definitely Blackburn doesn't completely. He kind of explains what it is, but he really leaves it.
Yeah, it's
open.
He doesn't. He doesn't get too deep into it.
No, not at all. But and the remedy comes very just like in the first book, very quickly.
Yeah, it comes crashing.
There's
down.
Not a lot of pain involved.
No.
And,
no.
There's a lot of running around. There's a lot of running around.
so much running around. I'm actually kind of interested in how in these two books he more or less tries to, and is fairly successful in mixing sort of this horror novel. You know, you have a crypt with a spooky dude, and you know,
right? And yes,
with pretty straight hardcore science fiction.
Completely.
And
because he quickly takes a left turn from that.
I know, and I followed him. It wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
So I think
there's something wrong with you.
Well, I read a lot of both, so I guess I'm primed.
The thing that also strikes me about what he does is that he has a few chilling moments,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you always feel like it's going to be okay, you know?
Yeah.
But, and I'm curious about the third book. He's really trying to work through something about Nazis, like what to do with them.
Well, he fought in World War II, so he probably has lingering issues.
Yeah, but he made the Nazi in this book heroic.
Yeah, well, yeah,
redeemed.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, yeah. I mean, the Nazi in this book is a war criminal, but feels a huge amount of guilt and does sacrifice himself in partial atonement. Yeah, for participating in medical experiments with Jewish prisoners.
Yeah. So he's really working through something about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, those 10 years between 58 and 68, 58 the first book, 68 this book, were huge in the reassimilation of Germany into
Europe.
Yeah, into Europe. So, yeah. Interesting.
Interesting point.
Interesting indeed.
Yes, I do believe so. I do think I am interesting, yes. Quite. But that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else about this book?
There were a couple of shocking moments I just want to point out. One where the one dude gets the phallic-shaped yes. arrow through his chest.
Yes, that was...
And there's all these booby... was great. Yep. But what was great was this character who is an expert in booby traps. And he's going into the crypt to make sure there's no more booby traps. I liked that character a lot. He was like the best character.
I know, and he was full-on Cockney.
Yeah. Oh, and he reminded me of Bronn from Game of Thrones. Yeah.
So one of the things... I was gonna say it's a slight thing, but it bugs me, but it bugs me, and therefore it's not a slight thing. It's huge. Blackburn frequently insists in the last book and in this one of writing accents, like faithfully recreating accents, and it drives me up the wall.
Why?
It's just because it makes it hard to read. You don't need to convey the accent literally. One of the ways you can do it is simply by changing the cadence of the speech. Or just say, you know, this person speaks with a London Cockney accent or a Birmingham accent or a Scottish accent, and then spell the words as though that person would spell the words, instead of all the the elided, you know, apostrophes and.
Yeah, that didn't bug me. I was fine with that.
You were fine with that?
I didn't even register.
Oh, really? Because I always have to sit, because I have to, read it and then pronounce it. And I can fill in the accents if you just spell the words.
Okay. You're a better person.
Or am I?
But the chili, another little creepy moment. So the phallus shaped spear through the guy's chest, and he lived, just to let you know.
Yeah.
And I think the transformation of Nancy was a little scary and creepy.
It was pretty creepy.
Yeah. And a little sad.
Yeah. And a little sad. Yeah. I mean, and you know, there was some moments where he's trying to build atmosphere. You know, the laughing in the tomb that happens a couple of times, that didn't really. That just seemed a little.
Right, and then the guy who looks for booby traps, he, you know, he tells us right away what it is. It's just like a bellows, and it's it's nothing.
Yeah. So
yeah. So, and maybe that this thing is spreading, and it never sent a chill through my body or. Had me creeped out or anything.
Yeah, not really.
Kind of felt like it was all going to work out. So
yeah, it's funny. I mean, so this book I liked better than the last one, we will be talking about the next book. But I have hopes for it that that trajectory will continue.
I do too.
So
let's. What else is there to do?
I mean, I got nothing else, but I think we should go down into the crypt.
No, we should drink. Let's go back to what we normally do.
Don't you think we've drunk enough?
It's cocktail time, damn it.
All right.
And now it's cocktail time. So what's our cocktail?
Well, let me tell you. It's like a sangria. So what you want to do is get yourself a pitcher. And in that pitcher...
is a full... how many cups of burgundy wine? One cup of burgundy wine.
Then 2 ounces of simple syrup. We were actually using simple syrup that we made with some mint in it. So it's kind of a minty simple syrup.
Yep. 2 ounces of tequila.
A cup of champagne. A half cup of lemon lime soda. Stir that with ice. And then pour it into cups of ice. And then garnish with slices of orange, lemon, lime, and some sprigs of fresh mint.
Yes.
And what are we going to call it?
We're going to call it the Holy Fucking Grail.
The Holy Grail? It's the Holy Grail Sangria.
Sounds good to me.
The Holy Grail full of sangria.
I like the Holy Fucking Sangria. Can you pour me another glass, please?
I will spill it out for you.
All right.
All right.
Well, that sounds good. It is good.
It is quite tasty.
I'm not crazy. I usually don't like burgundy wine, but when it's when it's filled with other boozes, it's pretty good.
And you sugar it up and throw some tequila in there.
All right. All right. Chin chin.
Chin chin.
All right. All right. So let's head on down to the basement.
To the crypt.
And here we are.
So we already,
as per usual.
So we already know what the next book is.
What is the next book?
It's John Blackburn's last horror novel.
Oh.
It is called...
It better be his best one.
Well, let's hope it is. It's called Our Lady of Pain.
Ooh.
Our Lady of Pain.
He has very promising titles.
They are very promising titles.
Yeah.
And
when did he die?
He died in the early 90s, I think.
Oh, okay. So he was around for a while.
Yeah. He was, he lived a full, rich life.
Good for him. Well, Our Lady of Pain.
Our Lady of Pain.
All right. Hopefully we won't be in pain reading it.
No.
Let's get out of this basement. We're out of the basement. Lickety split.
So, what else we got?
There's nothing else I really need to say about the book. Unless you want to start talking about the book covers. We don't know what else to say.
There's nothing else about the book covers. It's nothing to say bad about this book that we don't have much more to say about it. There's just not that much to the book. It is literally what it is.
Yes, that if there ever was that phrase is going to fit, it's fitting with this book.
Yeah, I enjoyed reading it.
And this author, frankly.
Yeah, so far that's exactly right. For this author is, you know, you get a good story and not much else, and it's not a huge time commitment, although it seems like it.
Right.
And then you go on to the next one.
We'll have to pay attention to that that quantum state. Really pay attention. Yes. What is happening to me when I'm in that
time is stretching and contracting.
Not moving at the same time. All right. Well, I think then that's it, isn't it?
I believe it is indeed, as you say.
It. So what should we do with it?
Well, we should take it down to the crypt.
Oh.
And bury it in concrete.
Oh, okay. But with the proviso that in 100 years, if somebody that's looks like you and talks like me shows up, and they can have whatever's in the crypt.
And has the dropsy.
Okay.
They can have whatever's in the crypt.
Sounds great.
That's a perfect plan.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And good night.
Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song. But he just kept right on.